Support for Talking Art on WVIK comes from the people at Quad City Bank and Trust, helping the local community with their banking and financial needs for more than 20 years. Information is at qcbt.com. Support also comes from the estate of Margaret Skinner, a longtime friend of WVIK and lover of the arts.
This is Carolyn Martin, and I'm talking art today with Bruce Walters, a professor of art at Western Illinois University who painted the large mural of the gymnast, which is currently hanging outside of the German-American Heritage Center in Davenport. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, welcome. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for coming today. And you were commissioned by the German-American Heritage Center to complete this mural as part of their Sound Mind, Sound Body Turnverein Traditions exhibit. And the Turnverein organization was nicknamed the Turners in the U.S., which is how I think most of us recognize it. What can you tell us about this rather interesting German group and the idea behind this exhibit and your mural?
Wow, that'll take 20 minutes. I guess let me speak more broadly. Basically, in the mid-19th century, intellectual, intelligent, educated Germans came to the Quad Cities, and they brought not only Turners, that tradition, and it was more than being gymnasts, but they also brought the arts to the Quad Cities, the symphony. We can trace it back to them, the Call Ballroom. Was originally had a German name, and they brought cultural events to the Quad Cities. I think they brought people sort of affiliated with some of the great German composers. I'm afraid I'll say the wrong name, but it was a person sort of affiliated with operatic singers.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know about that. I did know the Turners was basically a fraternal organization that combined physical education. They did a lot of gymnastics with, and acrobatics with exercising the mind too, in terms of civic events and politics. So this exhibit that's currently on at the German American Heritage Center, you painted this mural of a large gymnast, and it's that link with the Turners, with their championing physical education that prompted you to do this. It's a very large mural, and it's hanging on the north side of the building. How large is it approximately?
It's 30 feet in length.
30 feet.
And the figure is a bit more than 20. Mm-hmm. And when I first chose that figure and sort of measured it out, I was thinking, oh, that's about the size of the figures on the Sistine ceiling.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I'm not talking about them other than just sort of their size, just for context.
Mm-hmm. How did you take a small drawing and how do you expand it on such a massive scale without losing the correct proportions? How does that work?
I started painting on a larger scale when I was a graduate student. I went to the University of Wisconsin, and I was fortunate to get a very big studio.
You'd have to have one.
Yeah. And the bigger school sort of room just sort of gave me the opportunity to paint on a bigger scale. And when I taught at Marycrest and I worked with the theater department, and I began to help with some of the backdrops. And these were sometimes productions at the Adler. And that's a really large space. And so I would work with sometimes planning, but more just physically painting, because I really enjoyed it at that scale. And it came natural to me. For some reason, I can scale things up. And proportion is something I'm very conscious of.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, when I painted the mural, it was painted on my dad's garage. And the garage, I was never able to really roll the whole picture out. And so I painted sort of in sections, roll it forward a little bit, paint it in sections. And the first time I was able to really see it is when I took it down to the center. And we went up to the fourth floor and looked out a window, and I thought, oh, good. There's nothing, egregiously wrong with it.
What type of paint do you use on this? Because it's on a canvas.
It's canvas. Mm-hmm. Primarily, I painted with house paints.
Huh.
You know, when you're the green, for example, that was 2 gallons of green paint. And I went out to one of the hardware stores and I tried to match. I didn't quite get it. I did it through a photograph, tried to match the color of the green on the Heritage Center.
Mm-hmm.
The color of the figure is sort of brick colored. And rather than introducing new colors, I tried to stay with what was already present on the building.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I didn't realize that you intentionally did that, and it blends in very well. And you are somewhat experienced at this because this was painted on the back of a previous mural you
Yeah, that's right.
Of Big Spiderbeck.
Why waste?
Of course, why waste? Especially something so large. I don't even know where you'd obtain a canvas that large.
Yeah, I think I got it at Sears Tent and Awning, and they had 10-foot width, and then I could get, I guess, whatever length I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And we, in fact, we spoke of Kelly just a minute ago. Kelly
and that's
Lau.
Kelly Lau.
Yeah.
And she's the executive director of the
and
German American
wonderful.
Heritage Center. She's
yes.
awesome.
Yeah, we need to always say good things about Kelly and mean them. We had talked about the mural, and we stepped outside and realized this is a space that would work. And so, that 10 by 30 foot seemed about right. And that, of course, limits the subject. When I first thought of gymnasts, I thought of, and I'm not going to have the correct terms, but in watching the Olympics, they have like a horse
mm-hmm.
and they move sideways.
Yep.
I thought that would be the strongest image. And I needed some gymnast sort of in action. It couldn't be a dismount because it looked like a person just bowing. So there had to be some activity, and it needed to have a certain staticness to it. So when I thought of the rings, the person's holding that. It's like a natural pause.
Mm-hmm.
And then I began to look for images related to that.
Yeah. No, it's really beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And in such a interesting part of history, because the Turners came over, I think, in the late 1800s. And that German concept of sound mind, sound body, which again is the title of the exhibit, must have really resonated with an American culture. And many of the teachings were swept into our school systems, into politics, and in various business organizations.
No, it's interesting how that weaves in to so many cultural things, educational. Mm-hmm. Again, the Germans who came to the Quad Cities were highly educated. And they brought those values with them.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, the Irish came early. There were other groups, and they contributed, so I don't want to overemphasize the Germans, but when I was on the board for the, I guess, the Center and Museum now, and I got to meet many of the other participants, and what fine people.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned the history through my participation. And when you spoke, I mentioned like the Call building, that was a surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, of course, this century, the German problem has sort of really worked against, the Germans in America. World War One, World War Two,
right, and it was after World War Two, I think, that the Turners became obviously less popular and somewhat disbanded. Though,
yeah.
Though it's interesting to find they're still, for those people who are interested in our architectural heritage,
yeah.
There's still some of the original Turners buildings that exist. The East Turner Hall in the village of East
yeah.
Davenport is now the Village Theater, and there were Turner Halls also in Buffalo, and that one burned down, I believe. But also Eldridge and then Moline and Rock Island had
yeah.
Turner's Hall, so they were scattered throughout. There was one downtown Davenport that was the second largest in the U.S., and that was demolished too at
yeah.
some point. But it was really it was an active group of people and very active organizations here in our community.
Yeah.
How did your relationship begin with the German American Heritage Center?
I had friends, people I taught with, the Husteddies, and I was invited to participate. And this is when the building was first sort of being reclaimed. It was the Standard Hotel, and I went to it. And I walked around it, and I thought, "Oh, this is a lost cause." And I was wrong.
Well, it's important to
I've
recognize
been wrong
that
many
we can
times.
All be wrong.
Yeah,
because it is a beautiful renovation.
It is, and that is part of the history of the community. When so many of the Germans who arrived here, they stayed there, and so I think it's I think almost essential that it's housed in you know, something that really, and that whole area, the Washington Square area, was very Germanic. There's a statue right next to it, a statue of Germania. That was basically originally on a fountain. That's now where the YMCA was.
Oh, I haven't seen that statue.
Yeah, it's sort of at street level, even though it's very large. And it's they presented it as greeting all immigrants to this area. Mm-hmm. And I like that sort of positive tone.
Absolutely. I mean, it resonates now with the current political climate. It's nice to have something so positive.
Yeah. But one of the things I think is wonderful right now is we have such good relationships with Germany. Mm-hmm. And it is a, you know, such a constructive relationship that I think that's the moment we need to focus on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, let's talk about you a little bit more in your art. You mentioned earlier that you obtained your master's degree from the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and you've been teaching at Western Illinois for quite some time now, I think since 1997, it said on your website.
Yeah, that's true.
That's a long time. What classes do you teach there, and what would you say is the most enjoyable aspect of teaching for you?
I teach primarily graphic design. On occasion, I'll teach like an art appreciation type course, or I've taught drawing classes and other things. Graphic design, for me, spins out of just, I guess, my personality. When I was an undergraduate, I was tempted to become a physics major. And I took mathematics, not so much algebra, but the like spatial relationships, mm-hmm. That comes.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I talked earlier with another guest on this show about the correlation between artists, people who are creative artistically, and people who excel at math and in the sciences.
Yeah, it can go many different directions. Mm-hmm. I guess in many ways I liked applied physics, and so astronomy, I was drawn to that. In fact, I was hesitating because when I was at Iowa, I did have Dr. James Van Allen as a teacher.
Oh, you did? Oh, that's amazing. So he was the famous physics professor who I think discovered the Van Allen belt, isn't it?
Yeah, he the first experiment sent into space, he controlled. He was the man of the year for Time magazine, and a very, very friendly, you know, unpompous person. And it was, in fact, one of the things I recall is at the end of one class, I went up to him and I said, here's my profound question. Why can't balloons just keep going up? And he answered me at length. And later I thought, that was the stupidest question ever. But years later, I was going through his papers. I needed to research what he had done. It's so strange, knowing the person, now I had to put on white gloves. I learned that before he was with NASA, he worked on balloons with the U.S. Navy for about a decade.
So he was very well qualified to answer that
question. Yeah, I think he probably thought, went home that night and go, my God, someone's interested in balloons.
So well, that explains why you did, because you did an exhibit, was it at the Figge on NASA?
Yes, I did.
So and that kind of ties in, and I know I'm understanding why you did that.
Oh, I have a real funny that, you know, from much of my life, I've been fascinated with not just astronomy, but any really push of science into mystery. And I would say, if I want to characterize the subject of my work or sort of the direction, I'm fascinated by mystery.
Yeah.
Things that are maybe knowable, but certainly not known now. And I guess I tie together things that are sort of unexpected, not only like NASA, but I find Halloween in much the same thing. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, if you look back, you're before electricity. Can you imagine how frightening the night would be? And here's this one night when it's thought that the veil between the living and the dead is thin, and how that would be such a fascinating, thrilling, frightening, you know, sort of experience. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I learned about, again, with Halloween is in the Celtic sort of traditions, on that night, they would take all fires and bring them together and then all but extinguish them and then bring them back as sort of a symbol of rebirth. And it must have been sort of a thrilling holiday in a world that would seem far more mysterious than ours.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you clearly are fascinated with Halloween because you've done these really amazing, I just saw them on video. I didn't see them in person, but you did these great exterior projection animations for the Dia de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead celebration at the Figgy. And talk about that. What did those look like, and how did you create that?
Well, those are these large papier-mâché figures that the Figgy, I assume, owns, but they were on exhibit through the building. And the connection between the two holidays is not as close as it appears, because when we think of holiday, we think of pranks or trick-or-treating, and the Mexican-centered one is, I guess, religious.
Yeah, a reverential towards your ancestors.
Yeah, and a part of Halloween is that remembrance of the dead. Remember, the word is basically the eve before the Hallow Holidays. Mm-hmm. So I find that's, I guess, just one of the directions I've explored, and I don't think I've come close to touching it. One thing's when I...
But tell us about the exterior projections. Like, how did you make these, and what did people see? Where were they projected? And I saw moving images had doing these funny walks, and they would kind of flash in and out on the outside of several buildings in the area.
Yeah, well, the fun part of that last one, it was on three buildings. So it
all in downtown Davenport.
Yeah, so it was... If you stood in the middle, it felt a little more, than just a single projection. But I guess what I really enjoyed is somewhere along the line, working with the computer, I realized I hadn't worked with animation much. And animation is so intriguing, but it seems so overwhelming. How do you ever begin that process? As time is going forward, the cost becomes less and less a barrier. The software becomes more easily accessible. And I applied for a grant. I got about $20,000. Hmm. Basically, I spent it on these projectors. And the first one at the Figgy was across the whole width of the building on the west side. And you could see it from the Centennial Bridge.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was really a lot of fun. And
are you going to do it again this year?
I've done quite a few, but I've different parts of the building, and so there's a part of me wants to try something new each time. Mm-hmm. I sort of go forward with it.
And with these images that you drew, that you designed on the computer.
Well, one of the reasons that I started with NASA was, of course, an interest, but also I went out and went to Washington, D.C. and spoke to these, the people at one of the NASA centers. And they said, yes, you can use those images. Those are taxpayer. I guess you've paid for them. And so I could use them, sort of at will. There was not a problem with permission. And as I've worked with videos, I've worked now with some short films, permissions are so important, and I've learned you have to either have original material or you can really sort of work hand in hand with someone who will say, sure, you can use that. Mm-hmm. But it is, I did one video, and it was tied with Bix Beiderbecke, and I used songs from the 19-teens, and I was stopped by Sony from putting them on YouTube from the teens.
Yeah, that's too bad because that's, of course, Bix's era. And you would need that music. But
I ended up getting original recordings by Josh Duffy. And what an extraordinary. By the way, Josh is one of the treasures of this area. Hmm. I hope people appreciate what he has brought, not just the Bix Fest, but just this interest in music from the 20s, the 30s, and 40s.
Yeah. Well, besides painting and these exterior projections that that I know you through, you also really perform a wide variety of artwork, and including other things as diverse as photography and film. You also write for the River City's Reader, so you are so busy, involved in just a myriad of artistic projects.
What I feel that not that I have an important place in the society, but there's not many art professors in the Quad Cities. Mm-hmm. And I feel I owe to the community effort. So I've tried to do things that are very public. When I started writing the Art in Plain Sight column, I guess
I'll
call it.
And that was for the River Cities Reader.
Yeah, I've written more than 50. I thought I'd write far less than that. But I kept finding these sculptures, and some of them have such extraordinary histories. And as I took the time, sometimes to read books even before I would write them, because I wanted to learn myself. And I discovered that often I was the first person to write about them. So I had to track down artists and communicate to people. And it was a joy.
Yeah.
It was time consuming, but it was pleasure. I could tell you about one sculpture. It's on your campus.
Okay. And on our campus?
Yes.
Augustana
College. Augustana campus. Uh-huh. And it's extraordinary. It's next to the Wallenberg Center. Mm-hmm. And the name of the sculpture is Freedom. And I walked past it and I thought, it's not a friendly sculpture. It has like two blades on the top. And I thought, what an unexpected title for this work. And as I began to look into Wallenberg's and look into the artist, I found his statements when it was installed, that Raoul Wallenberg lived in the same city that the artist lived in. It was in Budapest. And he saved thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of Jews during the Holocaust. He literally would climb up on top of trains heading off to Auschwitz and pass these papers through the people and order them off the train because they were now protected by Sweden. He had no official standing. This is a young man, too. And the war ended. He was captured by the Russians and certainly died in a gulag. And that's even with the Pope, U.S. presidents trying to intervene. So when, I can't recall the art's name, I'm so sorry, it starts with a K. And when I wrote the article and I took sort of a risk, he wrote back to me and congratulated me for sort of understanding
it. Yeah, the sculptor did.
Yeah, and I think he was living in like Transylvania at the time. So
well, that's fantastic. And that's what I think is so beautiful about people like yourself who do that for us, who tell our local stories and connect us to the larger world.
We so overlook the history of this area.
Yeah.
We have an extraordinary history, and sometimes maybe that's always true of any community, but from the inception of the computer, which occurred in the Quad Cities, to Black Hawk, which I'll talk about Black Hawk to people, and they know the name, but they really don't know the story. Mm-hmm. So this is something I think that needs to be told again, again, and again. And then those people who hear it need to sort of pass it on as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, your students at Western Illinois are certainly lucky to have you.
Oh, I appreciate
it. And the rest of us are too. So Bruce Walters, thank you so much for talking today, and best of luck with all of your upcoming artistic endeavors,
I got big ones coming.
Good. Well, we can't wait to see them. The German American Heritage Center in Davenport is hosting an exhibit entitled Sound Mind, Sound Body, Turnverein Traditions through September 15th. The exhibit is on the third floor of the center and is included with the regular admission fee, which is only $5 for adults and $3 for children. They are open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4, and on Sunday from noon until 4. But you can always drive by anytime to view the large gymnast mural painted by Bruce Walters, which is hanging on the north wall of the building. This has been Carolyn Martin, talking art in the Quad Cities for WVIK. Our theme music is provided by a Quad City legend, the late Ellis Kell.